This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
I asked Slate's Jim Newell to be my guide to the latest and loudest congressional beef.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to come out this morning.
You know, it's really easy. This is a beef that was given new urgency last week when Marjorie Taylor Greene called reporters to the Capitol building to issue a pointed threat to the man some might consider to be her boss, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson.
Mike Johnson is not capable of that job. He has proven it over and over again.
At this presser, she officially called for Johnson's head. The case against Mike Johnson, according to Marjorie Taylor Greene, is simple. He's too liberal, too willing to compromise with Democrats. And since any member, just one of them, can trigger a motion to vacate, a vote to oust the speaker, here we are.
Does the members of Congress support the uniparty? Is this what they support?
I mean, she said Mike Johnson gave a warm hug and a big, wet, sloppy kiss to Hakeem Jeffries.
Because Mike Johnson is giving them everything they want. Everything they want. Every single thing they want.
It was a visual.
It's a visual, yeah. They did not kiss that I know of, but yeah. But the metaphor was strong.
So ultimately, Marjorie Taylor Greene declares she's going to take her motion to vacate to a vote this week. She said, I think every member of Congress needs to take that vote and let the chips fall where they may. Do you think Marjorie Taylor Greene thinks this vote is going to go her way? Like she's going to succeed in kicking Mike Johnson out of office?
I don't think she does. It's not going to go her way. It's going to be not even close. It's going to be extremely lopsided, and she knows that.
So why do this anyway?
I think she got herself into a corner here.
Today on the show, inside the power struggle between Marjorie Taylor Greene and Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, and why this threat to Republican leadership seems like it's going to go down very differently than it did last time. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier, and it could help you save, too.
Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, or even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Can we take a little trip down memory lane and talk about the evolution of Marjorie Taylor Greene?
I would happily do that, yes.
Okay. I mean, lots of people know she's a congresswoman, Republican from Georgia. But do you remember when she first entered the scene?
It was 2020. That's when she won her first race for Congress. She was in a primary in Northwest Georgia, open seat. There are a bunch of contenders. I think I first caught a glimpse of her. She did one of those ads where, you know, she was showing off her gun collection.
I have a message for Antifa terrorists. Stay out of Northwest Georgia.
And, you know, she ended up winning that primary. And then a lot of things came out about her past, you know, promoting conspiracy theories about, I don't want to say subscribing entirely to, but sharing things on social media about 9/11 conspiracy theories or the Parkland shooting.
QAnon sympathies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anti-Semitism.
QAnon. Oh, God, I forgot about QAnon. Yeah.
Yeah. Did any of this hold her back?
No, not at all. No, I mean, her district is like one of the most conservative in the country. So it, if anything, it helped her to a certain extent get through a primary, you know, maybe the QAnon stuff. You know, it got her attention, and that's all you really need to get through one of those quick primaries. It was amazing, though, how she had already kind of become this, you know, character, you know, among Democrats is like this crazy new Republican coming to Congress. And even before she was in Congress, like she was very close to Donald Trump. You know, she was in that post-election period, like flying around with him and stuff.
This one, I never, ever want to have her as my enemy. Marjorie Taylor Greene. Where is she? She is so unbelievable.
So even before she stepped foot in the Capitol as a sworn in member, she had kind of assumed this status as the new crazy Republican in town.
I think the thought was among a lot of people, a lot of Republicans, oh, she'll moderate once she gets to Washington. You know, that's how it works. You kind of get conscripted to the party line. Is that what happened?
Not immediately. No. At first, she kind of got in and just kept making a ruckus every day, some new things from her past, you know, sharing this conspiracy. This one was pretty famous about Jewish space lasers.
What would that look like anyway? A laser beam or light beam coming down to Earth? I guess. Could that cause a fire? That's her in her own words on the lasers.
A threat to Nancy Pelosi.
There was a post in which, and, you know, this is really graphic stuff. Somebody said, a bullet to the head would be an easier way to remove Pelosi, and Green liked that comment.
More and more just kept bubbling up, and Democrats who are still in power her first couple of years in the House, they decided to strip her of her committee assignments. And that was a pretty big deal to have a unilateral decision to rid someone of their committee assignments, which usually they've left to each party. But they considered her such a embarrassment to the House of Representatives that they had to take that step.
What about her Republican colleagues? Did they like her?
No. I mean, it depends. depends on which Republicans you're talking about. You know, the 30 or 40 pretty far right members who find a common cause in someone who's looking to get attention rather than legislate, kind of, and who is pretty hard line on making ultimatums and blocking legislation everywhere. But one person who, interestingly, she formed a very good relationship with was Kevin McCarthy, who in those first couple of years, you know, he was still the minority leader. He was hoping to become speaker in the midterms. And he realized that she could be an important validator for him on the far right, among people who are skeptical of him and his, you know, long career in Washington and his rather shape-shifting politics. So she formed a pretty good relationship with him, which was interesting. And he backed her up in public pretty regularly. And that, I think that relationship they formed, there's a direct link between that and what's going on now and her push to kick out Mike Johnson.
What do you mean?
So when they kicked out Speaker McCarthy last year, when they had that motion to vacate, she was one of McCarthy's biggest defenders.
Yeah, the motion to vacate was brought by Matt Gaetz, right, from Florida?
Yeah, that was brought beginning of October of last year. And Green was someone who was saying, this is stupid, like, this is counterproductive. You know, Kevin McCarthy's trying his best. This is just, we have a small majority already. This is just going to hurt us more. Like, she was sounding out of nowhere, like a kind of a more establishment figure.
Yeah, an institutionalist.
Right. And another interesting person was, in that same role, was this guy, Thomas Massie, who's another congressman, another very far-right guy. He was nicknamed Dr. No for just voting no on everything. You know, a very anti-establishment guy. And he was also very close to Kevin McCarthy. McCarthy rewarded him with a seat on the Rules Committee, which is a pretty prestigious thing. So you had those two kind of defending McCarthy last year when he was on the cusp of being thrown out, and all these other right-wingers who are going after McCarthy and threatening to get rid of him.
A quick reminder, not only did they threaten to get rid of him, they did get rid of him. The 216 to 210 vote marked the first time in history that the House removed its leader, the guy Green and Massie were backing. So Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie end up kind of with egg on their face.
They don't get to take part in the fun of kicking out Kevin McCarthy.
No fun for you.
They don't get to be part of that revolution. Now, if you look for, you know, at this effort to get rid of Mike Johnson, most of the Freedom Caucus, including Matt Gaetz, Freedom Caucus adjacent as well, are not for getting rid of Mike Johnson, as pissed as they are at him for some of the deals he's cut with Democrats. But the two leaders of this effort to get rid of Mike Johnson in the opposition of everyone else are Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie, the two who did not get to take part in the fun against McCarthy because they were close with him, and now I think are trying to make up for lost time.
It's like they wanted to go to the party, and so they're having their own.
Yeah, and I think they're still furious about how McCarthy was treated. And I think that you really can't overlook that and why they're going down this path with Johnson right now. There's a bit of I told you so here.
After the break, motion to vacate, round two.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
So Mike Johnson was made House Speaker about 6 months back, and almost immediately, Marjorie Taylor Greene was threatening his job. First over a spending package she didn't like, then she took issue with aid to Ukraine.
I know people, especially MAGA, especially the Republican base, they absolutely will be furious with our new speaker if he is tying Ukraine money, billions and billions more money, especially with the news that has come out that there's so much corruption and money's being stolen over there, U.S. taxpayer money's being stolen. And our speaker is going to tell Americans that Ukraine is on the same level as America's border. No way. They're not going to like it.
Initially, Mike Johnson had been against this aid, too. But last month, things started to turn. Johnson began talking to Democrats about passing the Ukraine bill. That's when Marjorie Taylor Greene set out this ultimatum. Pass the aid, and I will call a motion to vacate. 2 weeks back, when the aid did pass, Greene was talking to reporters within minutes.
I support my majority. I support the majority next time. I do not support Mike Johnson. He's already a lame duck.
So now we have this motion to vacate. But unlike former Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Johnson has some key allies.
So if you look at how the McCarthy deal went down, no Democrats helped McCarthy because Democrats had years and years and years of complaints against McCarthy that he was, you know, two-faced, that he would take cheap shots against him, that they couldn't really trust him. So there's no support there whatsoever. And so all Democrats voted with just 8 Republicans to get rid of McCarthy. This time you have not quite a deal made between Jeffries and Johnson.
Hakeem Jeffries, the leader of the Democrats in the House.
Yes. Yeah. But basically, you do have a bargain here. Johnson took a political risk in putting Ukraine on the floor, which all Democrats wanted. So they're going to save his job now. So you can have, you know, 2 Republicans or 5 Republicans or 10 Republicans, 20 Republicans, 100 Republicans, whatever, try to get rid of Johnson, but no Democrats will support it this time. So basically, Democrats didn't trust McCarthy, and so we're fine to let Republicans eat their own on that one. But this time they got something concrete out of Mike Johnson. So at least in this case, they're going to backstop him.
Can I just put my finger on something here? Which is, all of this sounds petty AF.
Yeah, we're talking about the House of Representatives. Yeah, that's what it is. That's why I cover it. It really is petty, but I think...
My listeners, you know, can't see you, like, your hand, like, grasping your face underneath your glasses, like...
It is, but, you know, at the core of it, why Johnson's going to survive is a deal. Like, here's you, like, we will give you Ukraine aid. Back me up when a couple opportunist people come to take my job. And that seems like a fair deal.
I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene knows this. When she announced that she was going to bring this to a floor vote, she specifically said, I can't wait to see Democrats have to go out and support a Republican speaker and have to go home to their primaries and run for Congress again. She's like foaming at the mouth for this to happen because she thinks it's going to be bad for Democrats and she loves it.
Right. And like that quote you just gave, like there's a lot, I think, wrong with her. And that's kind of reverse engineering from her position, which is like, I have to find some way to bring this to the floor so I don't look weak. Because that logic doesn't really make sense. Like, Democratic primary voters are not the same as Republican primary voters. For better or worse, the median Democratic primary voter actually likes things like cooperation and, you know, like making the workplace in Congress a functional place. So Democrats aren't going to get punished for not even voting for Mike Johnson. They're just voting to table or kill this motion.
It's interesting because I heard that. I was like, oh, does she have a point? Is there like a logic here?
Everything I know about Democratic primary voters is like people are not going to be primaried for like voting for Mike Johnson. I mean, if anything, I think it will help Democrats in vulnerable districts be like, you know, we made a deal, like I got Ukraine aid, like in exchange for protecting the House from crazies taking over.
Do we know what Donald Trump thinks about this speaker fight in Washington? Because it seems to me like he's like the decider man when it comes to Republicans.
Yeah, he's against it. I think that was actually one of the smartest things Johnson did, was just ahead of this Ukraine aid thing. He's like, OK, I know I have to either get Trump on my team or at the very least sideline him from trying to take me out. So he visited Trump under this veneer of we're going to go and talk about election integrity. They had a press conference. He kissed the ring.
We're getting along very well with the speaker, and I get along very well with Marjorie. We have a speaker. He was voted in, and it was a complicated process, and I think it's not an easy situation for any speaker. I think he's doing a very good job. He's doing about as good as you're going to do. And I'm sure that Marjorie understands that.
And so he got Trump to, one, not come out against the Ukraine aid bill. Like, really, really important there. I don't think Trump came out for it, but he didn't actively oppose it. And he also seems to have gotten Trump to defend Johnson and how he's doing his speakership. Like, he said in radio interviews, you know, oh, Mike Johnson has such a tough job. He can't do anything he wants. He has a one vote margin. You know, leave the guy alone a little bit. And I think Trump doesn't, as Trump now is on the ballot himself, he doesn't want Republicans making a circus, you know, on television where you have another month long race for the speaker. He wants to avoid all of that.
So why would Marjorie Taylor Greene move forward if Trump, who's a huge ally and supporter of hers and part of her power comes from him, why would she do this?
Well, it is like a pretty big risk for her here. You know, I mean, her fellow House Republicans are going to be like, okay, there goes Marjorie being crazy again, whatever. It doesn't risk really her standing in the House because she didn't have much to begin with. But yeah, among Trump, she's taking a real risk. You know, Trump and his team, the RNC chair, who was appointed by Trump recently, they do not want her doing this because it's a distraction, but she's doing it anyway. And I think you have to imagine being her. You said 2 months ago, if he does one more thing, I'm going to throw him out. You know, like, this motion is coming. Then he does the thing. Then you say, well, guess what? I'm backing down. I think that's just the primal instinct. Like, you can't back down.
But Trump does that all the time. Trump, like, threatens and then he's sort of like, nah, whatever.
Yeah, but he's, like, better at politics than she is. He finds ways to get himself out of corners. He's rather famous for that. But and I think the other thing the Democrats did was they came out, Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic leader, came out with a statement saying, if Marjorie Taylor Greene tries to oust him, we will support him. So they kind of made this formal. And that was almost like a dare to Greene. And I think that just pushed her over the edge.
Does the fact that she's willing to challenge Republican authorities, like, strengthen her in some way? The fact that she's like, I know that Trump and his Republican Party don't want me to do this, but I'm representing you, the American people, who don't want whatever, Mike Johnson cooperation, et cetera, et cetera.
I think that playbook would work perfectly if it was just against House Republican leaders. Like, yeah, like, all 216 of my fellow House Republicans, like, hate me for this, but guess what? I'm doing it anyway. Like, yeah, those are good politics, frankly. The Trump thing, though, like, him at least privately warning her against that, that does really threaten kind of a rift. I would imagine she's just thinking, you know, I think she thinks he'll probably just get over it in a month, you know, and that's probably true.
You know, it's clear that a bunch of Republicans think they're going to be able to talk Marjorie Taylor Greene out of this vote still. And she kind of left it open a little bit. She's like, I'm going to give people the weekend to think about it, think about their choice here. Do you think it's possible that this week a vote to oust Mike Johnson just doesn't materialize at all?
I suppose there's always a chance. I think that someone would have to present her with a convincing alternative for how she saves face here. If she didn't do that, you know, you need to kind of give her an exit ramp from this righteous ground she's taken. So, I mean, that would be kind of the carrot, and the stick would be Trump actually really leaning in and saying, like, don't do this. Do not do it. You'll be cut off or something.
I mean, I was struck by when it became clear Marjorie Taylor Greene was going to bring this vote. It seemed very easy for television reporters to walk around Capitol Hill and get lots of Republicans basically saying, this is nonsense.
Right. Marjorie had every right to do it, but it's not the time.
I wish she wouldn't do that. That's sad to hear. You know, we got more important things to work on instead of that.
Bless her heart. I think this is all about wanting more attention and not producing actual results for the people.
It made me feel like she doesn't have a ton of friends.
No, and I think it would be the second time they've had to replace a speaker this Congress. Republicans are so frustrated right now with how this Congress has gone, not just with the constant challenges to the speakership and the hostage taking of legislation and just how nasty things have become. they cannot stand any more of this, especially as we're now getting into election season.
Even the party of no needs to say yes sometimes.
It's just so bad. And it's to the point where it's like a bipartisan institutional concern about how embarrassing they are to the public right now. Like, I think part of the Democrats saying they'll back up Johnson is not just that he gave them Ukraine aid. I think they, even though they might like seeing Republican disarray as a spectacle on the floor, like, they're like, enough. Like, even we don't want this internationally embarrassing every 6 months choose a speaker process. Like, let's just sideline the crazies, 400 of us or whatever, sideline these people who don't want to govern whatsoever and be done with it. So I think, like, there's a real exhaustion across the body right now.
What does that mean for Marjorie Taylor Greene's prospects? In a normal world, being someone who would bring a vote like this, even when your own party doesn't want you to, the other part, like when the entire Congress is united against you, I don't think it would bode well for you as a politician, but it doesn't seem to impact her at all. It just rolls right off.
I guess you have to think about what her prospects are, you know? I mean, where is she going from here? Does she have some big piece of legislation she wants, you know, that her a pet project she's trying to get signed into law? No. So she doesn't really need to, like, cozy up to anyone anymore. I don't really know what her future is beyond getting attention, amassing attention, and seeing where that takes her.
Jim Newell, I'm super grateful for your time. Thanks for coming on the show. Good luck this week.
Thanks for having me on.
Jim Newell is Slate's senior politics writer. And that's the show. If you're a fan of What Next, the best way to support our work is to join Slate Plus. It's our membership program. Go on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to find out all about it. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Anna Phillips, and Madeline Ducharme. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the senior director of podcast operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you back here next time.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.